Hello and welcome to the 41 Minutes of Heaven we call the D1 Baseball Podcast. I am your host, Michael Patrick Rooney. I am joined by two extraordinary gentlemen, Aaron Fitt, Kendall Rogers. Gentlemen, happy Friday. We are taping on Friday. How we doing? Happy Fall Friday. How are you boys?
Living the dream, Runes. Living the dream.
LTD.
I'm feeling great. I just realized that you guys definitely had higher SAT scores than I did.
Is that a surprise?
It doesn't matter, Kendall. No more SAT scores.
Mine wasn't bad, but it wasn't what you guys was.
Did you guys see that? No more test scores. I mean, or it's not. It's
See that. Yeah no more standardized testing to get. No more standardized testing for any student athlete to get qualified to play sports in college.
Nice.
Yeah, and the California system. They don't even use test scores for admission anymore. So,
which I'm actually okay with that.
Yeah, I'm just trying to run multiple fantasy football organizations. I don't even have brain space for test scores, and
yeah, you're
I don't
just
even
trying
care
to set
about
your lineup.
Posterity, Fitzy. Screw the future.
Yeah, take that future.
Take that posterity. You're on your own. Oh, says the guy with no kids. There you go.
That's right. Goes.
Yeah. Kendall, it's all on you, buddy. The future is yours. So, gentlemen, it is scary. We start the podcast in fear. gentlemen, let's thank our sponsor. As always, the pod is brought to us by Driveline. Driveline offers a variety of training, education, software, and hardware solutions for both players and coaches. Coaches, if you are overwhelmed by all of these things, collecting different data sources, mass athlete programming, third-party analytic insights, here's what you do. You can call Driveline. You can email into support@drivelinebaseball.com. Get yourself set up with your own custom player development bundle on the track platform. You could look into Driveline certification that'll empower you to run Driveline type training, pitch design, and or biomechanical data collection with products like the Pulse Workload Monitor. Man, I want a Pulse Workload Monitor. I mean, it probably doesn't apply for writers and journalists and medical sales trainers, does it?
You never know, Runes. You never know.
Yeah, I feel like my workload.
That sounds. That just sounds awesome.
Doesn't it? Yeah,
I'm a big fan of bundles. So the custom player development bundle. I think that's the key to the whole deal.
Yes, that's right. Bundles. Well said, Fitzy.
It's actually kind of interesting. We talk about Driveline. I was just talking to Jim Schlossnagel last week, and I was doing my Aiden Fall report, and you know they've got a couple of kids like Jonathan Childers, like really deep into the Driveline program, and they've been seeing some really good results. He said so. Yet another reason to use the boys at Driveline.
Yeah, I mean, I think their impact on baseball, college baseball specifically, undeniable, right? Like just
huge.
Now again, it's like anything in life, right? Like that's what I think the conversations. To finish the tangent, the conversations we've had with the Driveline guys are so instructive because, you know, like anything in life when taken to excess is dangerous. And so like if the only thing I'm doing is weighted ball training and velocity training and I just ignore throwing strikes, then yeah, of course that's bad. But no one from Driveline would ever tell us to do that. Like I think that's the beauty of the Driveline. It's become so iconic that we lose the notion of what it actually is. But to your point, KR, man, these guys have, you know, players have made massive gains and impact from the Driveline training. There's no question that.
Yep.
So Fitzy, when are you going to do Driveline training for your golf, for your driver?
I'm already well into it, Runes.
Where's your weighted ball?
Weighted balls in the corner over there.
Yes. You do not want to see Fitzy on the golf course in 12 months when he's hitting the ball 330.
Can we make that part of our new deal with Driveline is just have like Aaron do like a golf version of it and he has to like chronicle it?
Yeah, I think
that'd
we should
be
do
awesome.
That.
That'd be fantastic, actually.
I like it. Oh, gosh, that's so good. Hey, fellas, let's do this. I wanted to do three things today. First, let's lightly cover what's going to be the new AAC and the new Conference USA, just some thoughts on that. I want to really dive heavy into fall observations because you guys have seen a bunch of fall baseball. I'm starting to wet my whistle. I'm going to see Long Beach State and Arizona State tomorrow, which I'm super jacked up about. And then, you know, I want to talk about that ABCA survey, which is really interesting about roster management, but let me read off. Okay. So once these conference realignment things go into play, you know, Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC, that's the famous one, right? We've already talked about the Big 12, their counter move, BYU, Cincinnati, UCF, and Houston going into the Big 12. So, you know, that's their counter. So now here's what happened. The American has pilfered six schools from Conference USA. So what I want to focus on, boys, is what these leagues are going to look like. So the new American is going to be this: Rice and UTSA, Wichita State and Tulane, UAB and Memphis, USF and FAU, Charlotte and East Carolina. That's going to be the new American. Now, the new Conference USA, they take a big hit, right? So that baseball league is going to be FIU, Louisiana Tech, Marshall, Western Kentucky, USM, which is a hell of a baseball program, Old Dominion, and Middle Tennessee State. So the new Conference USA Baseball League is only going to be seven programs. Mm-hmm. So Kendall, why don't we start with you? Because you really are the guru at this stuff. Do you have any kind of top line takeaways from this?
Well, the interesting thing to me, guys, is the fact that the Conference USA is kind of on life support right now. I mean, right now the Sun Belt is looking hard at Southern Miss and Old Dominion. Conference USA is trying to keep those two schools. I mean, frankly, and we talked about this last night a little bit, Runes, like I'm surprised the AAC didn't want Southern Miss. Like when I look at Southern Miss, I get it. Like they're in the southern part of Mississippi. Like they don't have like a great, TV area. But like when it comes to the actually like caring about college sports, caring about baseball, football, sports like that, and, you know, having a passionate fan base, it's really hard to find like a high major like USM. Like it's hard to find schools that are like that outside of maybe them and like Louisiana. So I actually find them pretty attractive. I'm a little surprised they weren't a part of the AAC group, but it'll be very interesting to me to see if USM and ODU either go to the Sun Belt or they stick with CUSA. To your point, they have seven schools now. If USM and ODU leave, that leaves them with what? That leaves them with five, and they need five to still get an automatic bid to the postseason. So at that point, you know, whether it's baseball or it's basketball or other sports, at that point, things start to get a little scary for Conference USA. Now, the conventional wisdom would suggest that, they'll just go add some teams, whether it's like Sam Houston or teams like that. But, you know, if they end up with five, it makes things very, very tedious for that league. But, you know, when it comes to the AAC, the school from a baseball perspective, I'm really interested to see it on a kind of a bigger profile, because I would argue the AAC is a bigger profile nationally than Conference USA. So the program for me that I'm really curious about is Charlotte. I think Charlotte's got a lot of momentum. I think they got a really, really good staff in place. I think being in Charlotte, being in Mecklenburg County, there's a lot of talent in that area. I think Charlotte is a program for me that could really benefit from being in a quote unquote bigger league like the AAC. I would keep an eye on those guys.
Yeah. And I would tell you, you missed a big bullet point for Charlotte, Kendall, that they have a notable alum in our favorite ESPN producer, Tom Schofield. So come on.
Well, that's true. I forgot. I forgot about Sko. Well, Sko is kind of the linchpin there.
Right. New Jersey's finest. Fitzy. Okay. So I'm going to give you a counter scenario to Conference USA. I agree with Kendall that Conference USA is it's not a good scene right now, but let's just think baseball only, Fitzy. I want you to call me like this could be a real thing, or you're going to call BS on me. So if I'm USM and Louisiana Tech, I'm looking at the new Conference USA. There's only seven teams. It's a little bit vulnerable. And if I'm La Tech and USM, I'm kind of feeling like, man, I could dominate that league over the next 5 years. And, you know, those are two teams that can do well on the non-con. I mean, maybe Conference USA can become a two-bid league, just La Tech and USM, because they're good programs that could kind of jack up a bunch of wins in that league. Do you think that's a possibility, or do you think a weak league with seven teams is a big problem?
And let's not forget Old Dominion also here. Team that was number one seed in a regional this past year. So
I would say they're more fits and starts, Old Dominion. Like they kind of build for a high and then come back down, it seems like. But yeah, it's a great point. They were literally a one seed last year.
Yeah. And, in Middle Tennessee is a program that I do think is on the rise with Jim Thoman. I think he's building something there. I suspect that they could be a factor in the years to come. We've been waiting on FIU under, Coach Melendez, and it just hasn't happened for them yet. It still feels like there's the geographic location and the track record of the coaching staff, and they have gotten talent. It's just something's mm-hmm. missing, but maybe that could be a solid program. You know, it feels to me, Runes, like it kind of reminds me of like the Mountain West, you know, where you've got not enough programs really. It's just if you're looking at a 7-team league, I mean, it's hard to get two teams in. How many times have we seen, you know, the Mountain West with a couple of teams clustered to the top there, and do they ever get multi-bids nowadays? You know, I mean, they don't.
Yeah.
Now it's harder to build a good RPI in the West than it is, you know, in Louisiana and Mississippi. So that's maybe something that could work out for Southern Miss and La Tech, you know, if they can finish 1-2, maybe they do both get bids in the small league, but it'll be fascinating to watch. And I'm kind of with Kendall. I'm wondering how long, you know, that current configuration can hold on, or what the next move is for them.
So you guys know me. I love realignment carnage. I know it drives Aaron crazy, but I love realignment carnage.
Kind the of realignments like the are.
Person. Yeah. But, you know, think about this. So a hypothetical, let's just say the Sun Belt swoops in and grabs USM, ODU, and let's say La Tech joins the party. I mean, think about this as from a baseball conference. If I'm to talk about the Sun Belt here, you would have ODU, La Tech, Southern Miss, Louisiana, South Owl, Coastal, and now Troy with Skylar Mead there. I mean, all of a sudden, like that goes from a solid baseball conference to like, damn, that's a really good conference in baseball.
Yeah. Yeah. The consolidation could wind up helping some of these mid-major leagues. Yeah. If you got, you know, you just kind of bunch some of the best teams from the, you know, the Southland, Sun Belt, Conference USA, all in American, if you can kind of consolidate those into maybe two leagues, you know, of course, baseball isn't driving any of this. And so I don't have a lot of expectations that this is going to happen where you've got the best baseball programs all bunched together, because football is driving the ship, which is one of the reasons I hate realignment. It just feels like we're along for the ride. But it's I will say that this new American is very, very intriguing. I mean, this could wind up being, you know, the number four conference in college baseball ahead of the Big Ten, even, because look at the traditional powers here, you know, Rice, Wichita State, Tulane, East Carolina. I mean, these are traditional powers. Florida Atlantic has been a great, as we've talked about plenty of times, not underrated, because we talk about them all the time. Kendall, I know you like to say that they're underrated, but it's a great program.
That's only Iowa. Iowa's only program every year I say is underrated.
Iowa and FAU. but FAU's, you know, for two decades now, I mean, at least, you know, they've been a steady winner and always a factor, a postseason factor. South Florida was in a super, you know, this past year. So, I mean, I know they've had a kind of a weird series of ups and downs there, but like they've had some good years, and certainly there's a lot to like there with the infrastructure, the talent base, and the size of the school. UAB with Casey Dunn, you know, I have a feeling that's a program that could, you know, could be on the upswing. Has a really good coach there, and you know, so there's, and Charlotte you talked about, there's a lot to like in this league. I mean, it's really, really intriguing.
Doesn't that feel like a three-bid league? That feels like a three-bid league to me, year in and year out.
Yeah,
like,
I would easily. Yeah. Maybe four.
Maybe more. I mean,
are you with me on Charlotte, Aaron? Like, when you look at their infrastructure and things like that, or are you kind of on board with the idea that they could become a national power, maybe a little much right now, but like a consistent, you know, in a regional, potentially hosting every few years, kind of like Houston was a decade ago.
Or FAU. I mean, I think they have that kind of a – you know, that kind of a profile. I mean, FAU's every year, like we said, kind of in the mix for regional, with you know, a chance to go beyond that. I mean, you know, you're in that same ballpark with Wilmington and Coastal, these really good kind of mid-majors. I think that's what Charlotte can be, if they can continue their current trajectory. And it's pretty, you know, encouraging what they've been able to do in a short period of time under Robert Woodard. And, you know, they're doing a good job getting talent over there with Toby Bicknell.
That AD is a stud, by the way, Mike Hill. Yeah. I've heard him speak.
No, he's really good.
Yeah. I don't know if they can keep him, but, man, he's dynamic.
Yeah. You know, FAU, by the way, that's one of those schools, one of those programs that I feel like they've had enough success where, like, John McCormick deserves a much, much better on-campus setup there. Yeah. I think in Boca Raton, if they could have they don't need to build a 5,000-seat stadium. If they could just build a 2,500-seat, really nice ballpark, I think that place could be a monster.
Love it. Hey, boys, a good transition there. Let's go to fall observations, because we, Fitzy, for sure, you've been like a dang rock band out there. Kendall, you've seen a bunch of stuff. So let's do this. Let's structure it this way. We'll go around the horn. Fitzy, we'll start with you because you've seen the most. So and we'll try to get around a couple times. So I want you to give, you can just pick a team and tell me something that really excited you about what you saw. And maybe it's something you read. For me, it's going to be more what I've read. Something that excited you and something that concerned you about said team. So something that excited you, something that concerned you.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to start with Southern Miss just because we were just talking about them a little bit. And I went in there, you know, kind of wondering what to expect on the mound. You lose two horses in the rotation, of course, with Walker Powell and Hunter Stanley. And I suspect the narrative there will be, well, how are they going to replace those guys? I'll tell you what, they got a lot of arms. You know, I walked in there on a Sunday afternoon. They went nine innings and they threw most of their good arms. And it was a good look. You know, I think Hurston Waltrip is a guy to really keep an eye on. Physical right-hander, 93 to 96, you know, with I saw a curveball, slider, changeup. Oh, I guess he didn't throw the changeup that day, but he's got one. So it's a four pitch guy, pitched very sparingly last year, but he's on, you know, on the come. And, you know, they've got several guys like that. I mean, big Stew, they call him Tyler Stewart, 6'9" runes. And it's 94 to 96,
big Stew.
94, 96 with heavy sink. You know, I saw makings of a little slider in there, changeup. Chandler Best, emerging arm, you know, lefty, 91, 93. He didn't have a very good year last year. They were expecting for more. Boy, he just carved for two innings. It was just dominant, locating, spotting up. 91, 93, really good tight slider, 82, 84 with some power to it. Dalton Rogers, you know, JUCO transfer, didn't have a good day for me there, but we saw him in the summer. I know Seif's really high on him. So I could go on and on. They've got a lot more arms maybe than I was expecting. This could be their deepest staff under Scott Barry. And certainly there's a lot back of the lineup. I would expect them to be, you know, physical. He got some veteran presence there with guys like Danny Lynch and Will McGillis and Charlie Fisher and the Count, Gabe Montenegro.
Guys
have been around
a
long time.
He's back for his 11th year at Southern
Miss.
That?
And his little brother's there now too. His little brother is a catcher with a left-handed swing, Rodrigo Montenegro, JUCO transfer. He's an interesting guy. So yeah. And you know, and then if you add some of these potential breakout guys like a Slade Wilkes or a Carson Pato, these really physical outfielders, there's a nice blend there. So, you know, I guess the question is, you asked for a question mark. Can these guys, you know, take the steps forward, right? Like you look at the numbers at Waldrop and Best and those guys had last year and you're like, yeah, these are the guys we're relying on. I mean, the talent is obviously there. The trajectory is obviously there, but they have to do it. They just haven't done it yet. And then same goes for Slade Wilkes, my man, you know, I mean, it's put on a show last year in the fall when I was there in BP. First at bat on Sunday, he goes yard to the oppo gap, and it was a rocket. And it's just, he's so strong. To me, I think I made this comparison before, but he reminds me of Griffin Conine, the former Duke outfielder, physically and the left-handed swing. And Conine had kind of that similar trajectory where he struggled, and then the lights kind of came on for him.
Fitzy, was the opposite field thing for Wilkes, like when you saw him as a freshman, was the power all to the pull side, or was he using, I feel like when I saw him as an amateur, he was kind of a pull monkey. So to hear him going deep to left field is encouraging.
Yeah, I'm with you. Cause I mean, if I recall, it was more of a pull approach. I mean, you know, again, batting practice is one thing. I mean, you're just hitting bombs to the pull side, but to see him backspin a ball, 93 mile an hour fastball, you know, the other way in game action, and it carried out easy. You know, it's just a very encouraging sign. The one thing for him is I think he's got a knee issue that they're taking a look at. He was DHing in this game, didn't run. He hit the ball out and just walked back to the dugout.
pro move.
Babe Ruth style. But so that's one thing to keep an eye on with him.
Love that.
He could be a definite bold predictions breakout candidate.
Yeah, it's, you know, the talent is ridiculous. So it's just a matter of gaining confidence, building that approach.
How about the Magnolia State has three Omaha caliber programs? Yeah. How awesome. You go, Mississippi.
Such a great baseball state. I was just on a Mississippi podcast before the show and just talking about those three programs. And I mean, I love going down there. I make it a priority every fall to make a Mississippi run, and certainly in the spring as well, because the fans are so passionate about baseball. Everywhere you go in the state, people, you know, you'd be in Jackson at a, you know, restaurant near the Capitol, and they'll be, you can overhear them talking about at State and Southern played last night. And, you know, they're just like, they're following this stuff just on a level that you don't find in a lot of places. And you know, of course they take great pride in their hospitality, and they're always really warm and welcoming and friendly when I'm down there.
Hey, Fitzy, before we go to Kendall's team, do you have, it's Pete Taylor Park, right? Southern Miss is.
Yeah.
Do you have a comp And Kendall, you could chime in here too.
Ooh, I've been there before.
I've never been to the Pete. Do you guys have a comp for that? Like, I'm trying to picture what else would I could relate it to.
What it honestly kind of reminds me. It almost kind of reminds me. The grandstand kind of reminds me of the old Packard, honestly.
Yeah, like it's kind of like
a lot of aluminum. It's like kind of spread back and tall and kind of aluminum. It kind of reminds me of Packard a little bit.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, and you know, game day atmosphere they're well known for. They got the roost out there in right field. It's kind of like their version of the jungle that East Carolina has in left field. You know, if they could kind of spruce up the seating bowl a little bit, I think it would have kind of that ECU feel to it. But certainly, you know, they draw and they have great atmosphere.
Love that.
Yeah, I'd say the best way I can describe, like, when you walk into it, it almost kind of reminds me of like a summer league setup. Like, it's kind of a hodgepodge of a lot of different things. It doesn't look bad. It actually looks pretty good, but it's just kind of a hodgepodge. It kind of reminds me of the ballpark in Madison where they have that showcase of the Northwoods.
Yeah. I know what you're saying there. I love it. KR, what give us, you've seen a few teams here. Give us some a thought.
Yeah. So real quick on Texas A&M, it's going to be a really interesting year for A&M. On the positive, I feel much better about their offense than I definitely expected. You know, I think after last year, I think a lot of people said, hey, guys like Logan Britt, Brett Minnick, they've got to step up. Britt specifically, he's one of those guys that, like, he looks it, right? I mean, 6'5", 220. Like, you know, he's shown flashes at times, but he was just very consistent last year. You know, he looked really solid in their scrimmage. You know, the guy that really surprised me, Runes, Cole Kaler from Hawaii. If you look at his numbers at Hawaii, you know, he had a really good average last year. I think he hit around 320, but, you know, the power numbers just weren't there. He showed no power. He showed quite a bit of pop against Houston a couple weeks ago. I mean, he hit two balls into the gap. I mean, they weren't just softly hit balls. They were absolute rockets. And, you know, Jim Schlossnagel told me that he's had a really good fall. So, you know, he's kind of a name to circle because he's obviously was an accomplished hitter at UH out of Hawaii. But, you know, if he can hit for a little power, that really helps him. Taylor Smith, we all know about the raw power that he has. He's been more consistent this fall. That's a big development for him, especially when you kind of combine him, you know, with Troy Klontz behind the plate. You know, Klontz has been Klontz. He was really good defensively the day I was there. Then Jack Moss, your Arizona State boy, he was really good after his first at-bat against Houston. He looked kind of lost in his first at-bat. I think I did the reverse jinx. I think I actually texted y'all, man, Jack Moss is behind on like a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. That doesn't bode well. In the next two at-bats, he hit like 92, 93, one off of gas.
He heard you he typing did. He, your text.
He heard, yeah, he KR. Heard me type that. But, no, he looked really good, and he's had a strong fall. So, the positive for A&M is that they're going to be much better offensively, I think, based on the one day. I mean, it's one day, so we'll see. But they looked a lot more powerful offensively. They looked a lot more consistent. On the negative, our man, Coach Nate Yeske, has a lot of work to do. They're going to rely on some young arms. You know, Micah Dallas, the day I was there, is one of their few veterans. He looked okay. The slider wasn't working for him. And, you know, as you guys well know, if the slider isn't working for Micah Dallas, like, it's good night, goodbye. Like, you know, like, he doesn't throw hard enough, just overpower guys with the fastball. So the slider has to be working. So that's going to be a big key for them going the spring. The two young arms I really, really like for them, Chris Cortez, a former Arizona commit out of Vegas, and then Ryan Prager. You know, Prager is one of those guys, he's kind of got a little bit of a funky angle, but he's a lefty, was up to 93, had pretty good off-speed stuff, had a good breaking ball. Cortez, to me, is really fascinating. I mean, it was electric. It was 93, 96, bumping a 97. So, you know, sometimes he has a little bit of a tendency to kind of push the fastball to his glove side a little bit. And, you know, I talked to Nate Yeske about that, and he said they really worked on that. But I don't know what role he's going to have, but, boy, he has a big-time arm. So, I guess the positive would be the offense. The negative would be just – you know, A&M just has a lot of uncertainty on the mound. One thing's for sure, they can't afford injuries on the mound. But if they can figure things out, you know, on the mound and get some guys to step up like Will Johnston, like Nathan Detmer, I mean, they could surprise some people. But there's no doubt there's a little bit of a new energy there. You know, that always happens with coaching staffs.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I mean, the SEC West, it is a joke how loaded that division is. I mean, they're just like – it's like the best just keeps getting better. It's really remarkable.
Well, what's really interesting, though, I will say this, as loaded as I think these teams can be, is, you know, when you look at A&M and you look at the uncertainty with the Friday night roll, like, if you look around the West, like, there really aren't any slam dunk Friday night guys. Now, I think, like, a Derek Diamond has an ability to be that guy. And I think Aaron might have seen him, yeah. But like he has that ability. Like he was better than Gunnar Hoglund in Arlington last year. But like it's kind of been, you know, hot and cold for Derek Diamond. So like he is like the one guy in that division that I feel like has a chance to be like a dominant Friday night guy other than Connor Prelip if he's healthy. But, you know, if you look at LSU, if you look at A&M, you look at Mississippi State, those are all teams that have question marks on Friday night.
Well, there's a gentleman you may have heard of named Lando. Who I know he hasn't been okay. Been a Friday night.
That's a great segue. So let's talk about Landon Sims and his starting potential.
But yeah, I mean, you know, and I didn't see him throw this fall, but we've all, you know, he's resting. He's thrown a lot, but we've all seen him. Landon Sims has been a dominant closer. But I mean, the thing is, Kendall, you saw him stretched out at Globe Life last year, and you know, I forget how many innings he went. He went deep in that was the extra innings game, right?
It was against Texas. He threw five innings. I think he might have struck out everybody but like two batters.
Yeah, it's nuts. You know, I mean, look, I know.
Yeah, that's a good call.
He's really good in the bullpen role, but the thing is, like, he doesn't really bounce back very well. They've always talked about that. Like using him twice in the weekend is hard. So I think it kind of makes sense. I mean, he's proven that he can hold his stuff, blow you away with a fastball, a slider. I mean, does he even need a changeup? I mean, I don't know. I'm sure they're probably working on one with him, but like those two pitches are so good that at this level, I think that might be enough. He's certainly proven he can get left-handers out with those two pitches. And, you know, I think it makes sense for them to try to stretch him out and get the most they possibly can out of him. And then, you know, at Arkansas, let's not forget about Peyton Paulette. Now it's a wild card guy that hasn't done it yet. Yep. You know, maybe Jackson Wiggins.
It's all there.
I mean, Paulette has got top 10 pick kind of stuff. I mean, you know, we've talked about it. The metrics are through the roof. He was able to avoid surgery, just rehab. I saw him throw a bullpen at Arkansas. It was good. 92, 93. He's got that high spin fastball, the riding life, and then ridiculous spin on the breaking ball. I mean, it's, you know, the metrics say it might be the best breaking ball in the country. I saw it up to 3,400 RPM last spring. It was 3,000 in that bullpen session a couple of weeks ago, but that guy's got, you know, big time upside. Just a matter of, got to go out there and do it and stay healthy.
Gosh, yeah, but that's the thing across the country, guys. Like, there's plenty of talent for Friday night starters, but who's done it? I mean, like, I just off the top of my head, Parker Messick is a guy that is like one of the more proven Friday night. And I'm not saying that to belittle Parker Messick. I love Parker Messick, but it's not like Kumar Rocker's coming back. You know, Messick's not in that class yet. So. Oh man, it's going
to
be interesting.
Yeah, Vanderbilt has something to prove in their Friday night role. So.
Yeah, and there's, you know, another one that I saw recently at North Carolina. The guy for them that I think could be the guy is Patrick Riley, who was just electric in Chapel Hill. I think it was, you know, and again, he's always had the arm strength. It's kind of just like proving it with the pitchability piece. But I mean, it was 93, 96, you know, and again, high spin, riding life. That slider was plus. Got a changeup that was pretty good. I mean, it's all there. And I think his development in the summer in the Cape was really encouraging. I think he's just kind of the next man up for Vandy. And then, of course, I tweeted about Carter Holton, the lefty, who's kind of like got that Sonny Gray build to him, except from the left side. He's kind of got that look, the athleticism and the way the arm works. And it was, you know, up to 96, you know, with
what about Christian
knockout.
Little?
And Chris, let's not forget about Christian Little, you know, huge talent. Good call, Ken. Yeah. He's a sophomore, second year. Can he make that step? I'm tend to be more bullish on the second to third year guys if we're talking about looking for a legitimate like All-America caliber ace, but I think Little will progress. I mean, we certainly saw flashes of it last year. The stuff is really good.
That's fair, but I Carter Holton, you know, if you think about the stock market game, because he's a freshman, you know, you might get a pretty good price on him. But I am all in on Carter Holton. I saw him really good in the amateur world, and man, I think he's going to be a monster. I am all in on Carter Holton.
Yeah.
Hey,
they reloaded. Oh, sorry, they reloaded as always. I mean, you know, Alden Seguin's another freshman. Keep an eye on quick arm, athletic guy. And I saw Grayson Moore up to 98 miles an hour, high slot. You know, I wrote down vicious tilt at times on the slider. Ooh, so
VT.
I mean, it was definitely had a good shutdown back end kind of look to him. So as usual, you know, they lose guys and they reload and they develop and they'll be just fine on the mound at Vanderbilt.
Hey, let me give you a hot take. I'm ready. I'm ready. Like the season's not for a few months, but I'm ready to start dropping hot takes. So I'm going to give you guys a take caliente, and I would like you to just shred it or do what you will with it. So I shared this with you guys over our chat. Arkansas, to me, is becoming or has become the LSU of the 90s. Now, let me throw my caveat in there. I'm not saying they're going to win five national titles in the next 10 years. I would be willing to make a very healthy bet that Arkansas will absolutely win a national title in the next 5 years. And no offense to the LSU fan base, but the 2020s are not the 90s, right? Like, it's a whole different animal right now as far as how many schools are serious about baseball, et cetera, even in the SEC.
That's coach.rooney@yahoo.com. LSU fans.
That's right. Yeah. My Twitter account is K Rogers. No. But here's why I'm thinking about this, guys. Like, I read your report on Arkansas, Fitzy, and Arkansas that year they won all 10 SEC series, all 10. It was one of the most difficult SEC schedules I've ever seen. Look at their non-conference.
Yeah.
And I think you can make a cogent argument that they're better this year. I really think you can make an argument that they're better this year. And it freaks me out to even say that. You know, it's a fan base like LSU in the 90s where it's an issue. Like, trying to play Arkansas at Arkansas is really difficult. That fan base is passionate. The facility. Think about how far ahead their facility is with that development center. And here's the final piece to it, guys. You know, the program's in momentum. And now the state is creating high-level Division I players. It's not California or Florida or Texas, but it's a smaller state. Arkansas to me reeks of LSU in the 90s. What do you guys think about
that? It's really interesting because if you look at Arkansas, and we've talked about this before, but if you look at Arkansas, even let's say a decade ago, they would really be one of those teams that, you know, they'd have a really good year. Then, you know, they'd kind of go back to, you know, there were times they would be on the road for a regional. Like, they were that kind of program. Yeah. And now I feel like Arkansas is one of those programs that, like, it's just wash, rinse, repeat. Like, they're recruiting at a high level. Their facilities are amazing. Like, they just got it rolling. And what's interesting is I feel like Mississippi State is like that same program now, but they're like a year or two behind Arkansas in that progression. But those two programs for me are very similar. Like, they're on the same path. They're both recruiting lights out. They've got excellent facilities. Those are the two programs for me, I think, in the next decade, just will continue to win 40 plus games every year.
I think the difference for Mississippi State, though, KR, and then Fitzy, you chime in. You know, Mississippi State is in a crowded college baseball state, like we mentioned a few minutes ago, whereas Arkansas, just like, they are that state's team. And so, but you're right. I mean, obviously Mississippi State can trade punches with Arkansas in baseball, no question about it. Go ahead, Fitzy.
Runes, I think you made a great point. One might even call it a cogent point about the in-state
talent. I'm a burgeoning opinionist.
That's right. You are Runes. The in-state talent, just looking, I'm scanning their roster right now. Caden Wallace from Greenbrier, Arkansas. Peyton Paulette is from Benton, Arkansas. You've got Connor Nolan, Greenwood, Arkansas. I mean, you've got some of these younger guys like Brady Tigard is an Arkansas kid that they like. Austin Ledbetter, another young arm that's exciting. Zach Morris. I mean, there are some real impact guys. And sure, they go outside the state. You know, you get your Robert Moores and your Peyton Stovall. Holy crap, you guys. You guys, we got to talk about Peyton Stovall. This is a Louisiana kid that they snuck out of there. This guy is a superstar. He's a freshman right now, true freshman. Plays on the right side of the infield, you know, second base, first base. I think it's kind of a Max Muncy type profile because he's, you know, he's physical, extremely advanced, mature approach, doesn't swing at balls. I mean, I think they kind of like him in the leadoff spot, even though he's got real power. I mean, real power from the left side, but he's so disciplined at the plate. I think they like him at the top. And, you know, I think the guy turned down more than $2 million to come to school. And again, you know, it's a testament to what you're talking about. I mean, kids realize they can go to college and develop, especially at a place like Arkansas with that ridiculous new 50,000 foot, you know, player development facility they just built that I got a tour of. It's pretty awesome. So if you're Stovall, you can, you know, you can bet on yourself and think that you're going to go to college and get better and have 3 years of an incredible experience. But I'm all in on that guy. That's one. If I'm looking for, you talk about stock to buy in on, I mean, it's probably too late, but he hadn't played a college game yet. So I'm buying, I'm putting all my chips on that one.
Go get some. Fitzy, before I go to Kendall, Stovall, when you describe him, he reminds me of Jacob Berry, but a better defender, meaning that like this is a kid with some strength and discipline at the plate. Yeah. Is there any similarities there?
Yeah, I mean, offensively, sure. Berry, you know, he doesn't switch. Berry switch hits, right?
Yes, correct.
Which, you know, Stovall's just left. But yeah, as far as like kind of if you're seeing who's going to put up better numbers in their careers, I mean, you know, you can make a case that Stovall can put up the kind of offensive numbers that Berry has, because you're right. It's that disciplined approach. It's that physicality. He's so quiet. And then he just whips that bat through it. It's serious bat speed. You know, I saw him go deep to center. Dead center, and I think it was on against Wiggins. It was, I don't know. He can turn it around. You know, velocity. He can hit off speed. I mean, it's the full package.
Hey KR, if you don't have a team, I actually of the things I've read from you, the team that I'm really intrigued with all of a sudden is Rice. Would you care to comment on them, or did you have somebody else in mind?
Yeah. So I'll see a lot more teams next week. Actually, I've only seen a few teams so far. So I'll see what. Three teams next weekend. But, you know, the thing about Rice, I was really intrigued to see those guys. I mean, I think we'd all agree that if you looked at Rice the last few years, the talent level hasn't been there. They haven't been physical. Their pitching's gone way downhill, which is really surprising, because I actually think Corey Barton's a really good pitching staff. So I don't know, you know, the reason for the madness there. But I just feel like they didn't have anything they could really hang their hat on. But, you know, Jose Cruz Jr. was hired in the offseason. It was a little bit unorthodox hire. You know, he was a, you know, hitting coach with the Tigers. He goes back to his alma mater. It looks like a risky hire. But I'll tell you what, I was really impressed with them. I thought they looked well coached. They looked much more physical. And I had to actually, for the fall report, you know, on Monday, but he was just saying that, you know, they saw just kind of the bodies when they arrived, and they said, hey, we've got to retool everybody. We've got to, you know, have individual strength and conditioning programs for every single player. He said that really wasn't the case before. And so every single player now kind of has their tailored approach from a strength and conditioning standpoint. And you can see it, you know, whether it's Nathan Becker, you know, Jack Riddell, the North Carolina transfer, was a really nice, you know, athletic body. On the mound, they had some, you know, had some quality arms and some quality bodies. And, you know, on the mound, I think it was where I saw the biggest improvement, because frankly, this was a team that last year I did not see – two arms. Royal Garcia was about the only guy last year. I did not see two arms in the staff that I felt like I'm sitting there going, you know what, that's a really good prospect. But when I looked at Rice the other night, you know, Parker Smith, for them, a young arm was 90, 94, you know, Micah Davis, I think he was a homeschool kid, but he was there last year. But, you know, he was 94 to 96, a physical body. And, you know, what's kind of funny about it, guys, is like he struck out one of the UH players to end the inning, and like he was talking smack to the Houston dugout. And one thing that Jose and I were talking about was like Rice did not have those kind of guys the last few years. They did not have that attitude about him. And he was like, you know, I'm sitting there thinking like, okay, it's a little silly to be like that in a fall ball game, but like you're trying to establish a culture and identity. So even something like that, I thought stood out. And then Caleb Williams, another talented you know, young arm for them, you know, was 90-92 with a really nice hook. So they've got some really nice young arms. You know, offensively, you know, there weren't a lot of guys that really stood out. You know, Drew Woodcox, the Texas Tech transfer, you know, Tim Tadlock was actually really high on him for the Red Raiders going into last year. You know, his role didn't really come together, but he's had a really good fall. But, you know, at the end of the day, really like what I saw from the pitching. And the biggest thing for me is Rice looked a lot more physical. They looked a lot more ready to be a solid baseball program again. And it's been a while since they've looked like that.
And Kendall, my big takeaway from what you wrote and what you just said, bar fight meter is on the rise. And we yes. all know that that's where championships start. Come on.
Well, I mean, you think back to those Rice teams that were really good. And again, I'm not going to sit here and prop up the staff and say they're going to return to 2003 glory. But, you know, if you look at those old Rice teams, you know, you had guys like Chris Colcourse that were, you know, a little rough around the edges. You had Wade Townsend, who was just a crazy man out there. You know, like they had those guys that were hard-nosed and had a little attitude. And that's what you need at a place like that. And what's interesting to me is that coaching staff, and I always kind of listen for this when I talk to new coaches. Like, I want to hear, like, you know, I have my idea of what's wrong with the program, but I'm kind of curious to see what they've kind of figured out. And, you know, one thing that, you know, that he thought was like their development just wasn't up to par, because at a place like Rice, like, yeah, we may go out and get some stud recruits, but we have got to be able to develop to win big at a place like this. And that, to me, like realizing that right off the bat and not just going, oh, you know what, we're just going to get premier guys over Texas and Texas A&M, because that just isn't going to happen in the state. the fact that they realize that to me is a big development. That tells me they know exactly what they're doing.
Runes, I know you've got a hard stop in a couple minutes here. So I want to real quickly throw a couple of things, a freshman at you, because I mentioned Peyton Stovall. I like to be out in front of the game on the freshman.
Yes.
Get these guy names out there before anyone knows about them.
Here's
some freshmen that I'm buying stock. Everyone at Duke, everyone knows Alex Mooney.
I got my checkbook out right now. Yeah. Let's go.
This guy's a no-brainer. Alex Mooney, shortstop at Duke. I mean, it's a real, real defender, real athlete. Write it down, Kendall. It's an easy one. You know, I don't even put myself out there for that. He's a blue-chip guy, one of the top incoming freshmen in the country. But Devin Obie just leapt off the field at me. Incredible batting practice. I mean, this guy, it's huge raw power, easy carry, to that left center gap, to the right-handed hitter, but also just flicks the ball the other way with authority. Physical, athletic, he runs, needs to improve the arm strength. Keep an eye on that guy. Really, really intrigued by him. At North Carolina, Vance Honeycutt, guys.
Ooh.
This one's really exciting. Super lanky, projected like a 6'3 athlete. He can really run. He's a great defender in left or center field. I think he's probably going to wind up winning that center field job, even over the veteran. I think Zarate would be the other candidate there. But Honeycutt has just been apparently a sensation defensively. But that swing really works. He's got buggy whip in there. Great BP guy again. I mean, he's going to grow into some real power too. Kendall?
No, I was going to say real quick, as an East Texas guy, can I get a scouting report on Chris Davis, the mullet guy, the Princeton graduate student?
East Texas.
Yeah, a little like stocky kind of, you look at him, step in the box, and it's like, okay. kind of a stocky build, but I'll tell you what, he runs. He had a hustle double yesterday in the scrimmage. He got a little bit of left-handed sneaky juice. He's a transfer from Princeton. So yeah, I think Chris Pollard really likes him as a older kind of transfer guy. A couple more, Hunter Hines. Mississippi State, bye.
I feel like it's a mad hitter, money right? guy.
Left-handed hitter. You watch him in batting practice. It took about 3 swings for me to get, whoa. It's physically, and this, the way the swing works, it reminded me of Hunter Renfrow, you know, another Mississippi State guy. It's serious juice. He hit a just absolute rocket home run to center field there. He controls the zone. They're raving about him. He's a stud bat, I think a superstar. And then Oklahoma State, I think, I don't know if I mentioned the last podcast, Rock Riggio, twitchy, kind of a just born to hit guy that I think will play second base for him. A little undersized, but really strong. Kind of the next, like in that Pedroia, Robert Moore type mold, that sort of a energy player that can really hit. And then finally, Oklahoma, Max McGuire, son of Mark McGuire.
Nice.
Right-handed hitter with now strength. Big time buggy whip in that swing. I think he's going to grow into serious power like his old man. So I think he could carve out a nice role as a freshman too.
Exciting, Fitzy. Great play by you. Look at all these new infusion of talent into college baseball. I love it.
Yeah.
Hey, boys, as we wrap, let me promote. We have our third, fourth coach conversation coming up on Sunday night. How about these schools that are represented? This is pretty cool. Cal State Fullerton, Gonzaga, Georgia Tech, Illinois, Harvard.
That's fun.
Ooh,
isn't that a cool mix?
I love the mix you have every week. I know you kind of go alphabetical order, but it always ends up being an awesome mix.
I know. So, yeah, we got getting lucky with the alphabetical order. So, gentlemen, well done. Again, these podcasts in the fall, we're trying to keep them crisp and just fun to talk fall ball. And I encourage everyone, get on the website. There's new stuff every day, podcasts, fall reports. We are in full go mode for the fall reports, and those are one of my favorite things of the year. So that is it. Always a pleasure. Appreciate the listeners. We will catch up in the next week or so. Gentlemen, have a great weekend, and we will catch you next time.